Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot. And also, at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Scrum Down NBC Sports Rugby Podcast. I am your host with the most, Alex Corbicera, and it is great to be back, everyone. So much to react to as we had the final weekend of the Six Nations Super Saturday, as we were calling it across NBC Sports, as we had two live games on CNBC and then Ireland v England on NBC, watching them be crowned your Six Nations Grand Slam winners. And, you know, just to react across the weekend, I think Ireland thoroughly deserve the title. Obviously, that game against England, I thought England played a lot better. They were at that test match intensity. They brought more physicality to their game. And they were in the game. You know, we talked, I think they still showed that they're a bit more of a one-dimensional side, more limited ways to win than Ireland. And then I think the red card, which, you know, is caused some controversy, was a big factor in maybe taking the sting out of them for that second half. You know, just touching on that red card, at the time, I said I understood where the referee was coming from on the NBC broadcaster giving the red. I know some people think it was very harsh. You know, ideally, I would have liked to seen a yellow there, because I think there was, you know, some mitigation of potential rugby incidents and lack of time to react and more of a bracing mechanism from Stewart, which gives that. I spoke to quite a high up referee who said that, you know, he might have gone yellow, but the red wasn't completely wrong based on the pictures that were seen there. And, you know, it didn't look good. A player was removed. I understand why it went red. I think there would have been a case to potentially mitigate it because of the knock-on and everything that went on just before that split second. But again, very hard when you have that sort of direct at-force head contact with a change of a turn. I can see both sides. And so I don't think it's an easy question. That's my thoughts on it. I'm sure some of you will be livid, disagreeing. Some of you might agree, and some of you might not even care. But that bit is done there. I think, you know, Ireland's ability to turn it on in the second half, to, you know, to find a way to take their shots with that try from Sheehan on the inside of the maul from Van der Flier. Thought that was really clever creativity as they'd gone, you know, to that, for Van der Flier, to that pod in the middle a number of times, to have that trail runner there catching the napping, I thought fantastic. And a sign of a good team in big games, they take their shots. And they just seem to have a bit more of a gear, a bit more bang coming off the bench to add impact as well, where I think England showed improvements in some ways. As we'll get into today's discussions with Ross Hamilton, you know, there's still some clear issues there that need to be addressed. You know, France versus Wales, another very entertaining game. I think, you know, France, Jekyll and Hyde at times, do some incredible things in attack, but they'll be kicking themselves at some of the tries they conceded, you know, and that really is probably what cost them the tournament, was that they weren't able to back up defensively what they could do in attack with ball in hand. And, you know, they came alive, as always, against the Welsh. We knew that they were going to do some naughty stuff in attack, and they really did. But I think, you know, conceding those tries, especially at the end there, you know, they'll be kicking themselves that they weren't able to put more pressure on Ireland going into that last game. And you know, I think you've got to credit Wales as well, that they stepped up. You know, I think they showed much more physicality in the contact area and the collisions. I think, you know, their conversion rate was much higher, found a way to score. Whatever the blueprint was in that game that Warren Gatland and the team were getting right, I think more of the same in the run into the World Cup. You know, he did go back to a lot of the old guard, which I think as well, you know, last game of Six Nations, big team of France, the experience of the occasion, I think was the right move, and probably a final Six Nations send-off for a fair few guys in that team as well. And then the other game, the opening game, which was Italy traveling to Murrayfield to take on Scotland. And again, Italy not rolling over, and making a game of it, but at the same time kicking themselves that if they could only, you know, cut down some of the errors, especially when they're playing in their own half, and also maybe take a chance or two more, you know, they'd have at least one win, potentially more, in this tournament. And I think, you know, Italy have shown that they're much more competitive side, that, you know, the talk of them, do they belong or not, has definitely quieted down with the way they're playing, and they are bringing their own identity and style to the forefront. Their 20s are consistently improving and getting results. I only think it's a matter of time for that gap closes more. It's just interesting at how much they are trying to play and how much that can hurt them as times. And that stuff we'll get into in today's breakdown with Ross Hamilton. I think Scotland, on the other hand, you know, a chance to get some change in there. No Finn Russell, no Stuart Hogg. Probably not the same beast without those players in, but again, still had, you know, bright sparks, did enough to win. You know, Italy had some moments at the end where you thought they might pip the game, but I think Scotland never looking, you know, too in danger for the most part. You know, job done and some experience and depth ticked off for them in a World Cup year. And I think them on a whole with the Six Nations will just be thinking what could have been if they'd taken more of their shots early in the tournament. Such a great start, 2-0. You know, the game against France, I think, will haunt them a little bit. The amount of opportunities and red zone entries they had in that game and the lack of conversion. And then similarly against Ireland in that second half, after a great first half, not really being able to back it up and take that to another intensity. And all of a sudden, they're a team that, you know, had hopes of being in the mix at the end of the tournament, had hopes of at least being second or spoiling the party a bit more, are in that sort of third spot, which, you know, they're clearly behind France and Ireland. Then there's Scotland. Then there's England, Wales and Italy below, is kind of what I think is quite evident as you look at this Six Nations on a whole. Now you have time to park it and, you know, digest the numbers, what's going on, and assess, you know, the post-mortem as such, as we like to call it. But those are just sort of my big picture thoughts on the Six Nations. It's actually time to get in today's interview and chat. It's Ross Hamilton returning again. I think he's been fantastic across this tournament with some of the insights and the numbers he gets. I love being able to go back and forth with him and just react to what he's saying, ask questions, give my observations. The majority of the data he's telling me in these chats, I don't know until we talk through it. And it really is, you know, a learning for me, fascinating, insightful, and hopefully you guys enjoy it. So let's get to that chat with Ross Hamilton. And we are joined by the returning Ross Hamilton again, performance analyst, you know, the man with the numbers, this Six Nations for us, giving us some incredible insights across the tournament. One last Six Nations breakdown sort of review to get through, Ross. We really appreciate all you've been doing this Six Nations for us, mate. How's it going? Welcome.
Thank you, mate. Thanks for having me. It's been great to be able to talk about this kind of stuff with you and give you some of the insights. Been really good. Great Six Nations, another one, of course, and a great finish as well. So have some a look at some of the big numbers that have come out of it.
All right, mate. Well, why don't we look at the games, you know, firstly across the weekend, and I'm sure we'll spill over into some tournament-wide themes and stats as well for certain teams. But we kick it off with Scotland versus Italy in Murrayfield. And, you know, the Italians, you know, made a proper game of it.
They did, and they made a proper game of a lot of games, and they've been close, right? But they lost all five. They got the wooden spoon again. So, yes, it's positive. We've said that many times. But ultimately, is it good enough? I don't think there's the conversation anymore of them not being in the competition because they had a great value. But they want to kick on and they want to do a little bit more. One of the big things that we've talked about and many other people as well is about where they were playing the game, and they were sort of killing themselves a bit because their attack was brilliant. Again, they outscored, they got a better, made more meters than Scotland on the weekend, more line breaks, more defenders beaten, better collision success, better game line success. All of these stats are brilliant on paper and they're what you should get if you want to go on and win games, and yet they're not doing that. And for me, the big numbers, and there's some pretty stark ones, I think, if I try to relate them to you, is where they're playing the game. So I had a look at their possession time. In the games that they played, they averaged 52% of possession. I know that's sort of a small margin above 50, but that was the most. It was the highest any team average of possession compared to the split within the game. But Italy's territory was the worst. They averaged only 43%. So 43% of all of the game was played within their own half. So they just didn't have the ball in the right areas. It didn't matter how many meters they carried or line breaks they made because they were so far out from the opposition try line. They weren't threatening enough and they weren't going to do that in the right areas. Teams could let them play and do it. See it many times from the restarts. I can see the play in my mind. It was an out-of-back play from 10, give it to Negra and he carries. It's a nice play, but why are you doing that in your own 22? If you want to play in your 22, that's fine as well if it's on because defenders have dropped back for the kick. But they knew Italy weren't going to do that, so they put 14 men in the front line and just stopped them every time. So for me, a little bit of their own downfall. Maybe that comes with ambition that they wanted to try and play that way, didn't quite get it right. Maybe that comes in an adjustment the next time. Another one as well, just to sort of show how stark that is. Out of Italy's own possession, they had 51% of it in their own half. So it wasn't even they were defending opposition's possession within their own half, having to be on the back foot. When they had the ball in their hands, they were in their own half. They had 48 minutes of possession in their own half. No other team had more than 40. Scotland were the next most. Some of the teams, Ireland, looking at closer to 30 minutes. So you're not far off of double the amount of time that these teams had. Italy had more over the other teams in their own half. And it just shows, it just highlights so starkly what they were trying to do and what they perhaps got slightly wrong.
And I think, you know, we've talked about this, but the real issue is they, with some of that possession, they are being quite productive. Like their entry rate to the 22 isn't bad. You know, their red zone conversion rate for a team that finished last isn't terrible. The big issue is the turnover rate and, you know, the amount of play that they do have, especially in their own half and turning over that ball there. It's just producing absolute pressure on them and then, you know, negating all the good they've done by all of a sudden giving the opposition the entries to their half with the ball that they didn't even have to earn. Because I remember even back to the first game we talked about with France, you know, France didn't actually score off many actual entries from outside of the half like they do traditionally. Against Italy, it was mainly all off, you know, set piece from penalties or from turnover ball in their own half and actually getting the ball in the 22 and scoring.
Yeah, too easy, wasn't it? Italy had the fastest ruck speed of the entire tournament. That is a stat, is something that we look at all the time. We associate that with Ireland, how strong they've been. They were second fastest. But then you think, well, hang on, they've got all of these great attacking stats, all of these numbers that on paper look so good. Why aren't they doing more with it? It's, well, they conceded the most tries because they just give it away to their opposition too easily. You just got to think, do all of that in the opposition half. Start there, and then you're fine. Then you're off on a good point.
And then anything with Scotland that you saw? You know, obviously no Finn Russell, no Stuart Hogg in that game. Some changes there. Did anything that sort of stuck out differently for them numbers-wise?
Well, really close, right? I mean, that went right down to the wire and there was an opportunity for Italy to score. I think we saw in the 76th minute it was. They had a sort of a 4-on-2 overlap and they kept it close. They turned the ball over. So they had a genuine chance of winning that game. The score at the end with Kinghorn sort of took it away from them a little bit, obviously, and the scoreline. But they had a genuine chance and they came back in it. But for Scotland, without those players, without Finn Russell, I don't think they're the same attacking threat. I don't think that's anything groundbreaking to say. But for me, it was their development in the big games. Now, Ireland and France are the two best teams in the world, yes. So they are streaks ahead of anybody. So nobody did this very well. But we talked at the start of the tournament with Scotland, how efficient they were in the red zone in the 22 versus England first and then Wales in the second round. And they averaged over 4 points per entry within those. We mentioned it might be hard to maintain that, and it proved to be the case because when you get into those round 3 and 4 games versus Ireland and France, they were down at 1 point per entry, raised it back up again against Italy at sort of 2.6, and that's a very reasonable level to sit at. But it was just the extremes of the weaker teams with England included in that, but then the stronger teams, as they couldn't maintain that. They had the opportunities. They actually had the most amount of entries they had in round 3. So they had the opportunities to do it. They just couldn't convert. And I think for them, if they want to kick on and progress even further, and they're probably the front runners of closing that gap, at least from a Northern Hemisphere point of view, to the Ireland and France, then they need to maintain that level of efficiency against the best teams when they get into the right areas. Because, again, on paper, they have the blueprint, they have Finn Russell there. They have the capabilities of scoring those tries and points. They just need to do it more often against the best teams.
Nope, I can't disagree with any of that.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
So let's move on to the next games of the weekend, which saw, you know, Wales and France play in Paris. And, you know, again, I think people were giving the spread, I think, for France was 21 points. People were thinking, and I was thinking kind of as well, that the French, if they brought that same intensity to the game that they did against England, that it could be another whitewash. But I think we've got to credit Wales that has got to be by far their best performance of the tournament. And, you know, the first thing sign we've really seen of something they can hang their hat on.
For me, what was so good about that, right, is we saw right from the off, from my point of view, how they tried to play the game. They clearly had noticed and identified that France were incredible with the breakdown and they spoil your ball. So they offloaded. They offloaded everything. Alan Wynne-Jones was throwing ones out of the bag. That for me was something that I saw sort of live during the game and then has proved to be the case with the stats as well. But it was just great to see that this is our game plan and this is what we're going to try and do. You can argue that England haven't done anything like that. Italy probably have a game plan that didn't quite work. Wales haven't had that until this point. I haven't seen what they're about, what they're trying to do. But it was at least good that we saw it and they tried to do something. In terms of the numbers, they made 16 offloads compared to France's 6. So when you think of this French team being electric, scoring from everywhere, Jouet playing the ball, some of the tries they scored are fantastic, but then Wales actually made 10 more offloads than them. So it just shows that was the game plan that I feel they went into to try to do something against France. And the other thing as well, we talk about France's power game and their strength and their speed of ball, which I'll come to for France in a second. But in terms of game line success, the amount of times that your carry gets beyond the game line, Wales were better than France. And again, from maybe a sort of a casual point of view or just from the old eye test, you'd think that isn't the case. That can't be true because France is so dominant. They're so electric and they're so fierce with ball carry. But Wales managed to do that. They kept the ball alive. They kept the ball away from breakdowns where they couldn't get slowed down and France getting over the ball. Jonathan Donty played 2 games, I think, since he's been back. He made 3 breakdown turnovers. The most in the tournament was 4 from guys who had played 5 games. You know, phenomenal return rate from a center, from a back, doesn't perhaps matter these days anymore. Doesn't matter who you are, but that was clearly a game style of theirs. And I think Wales went into something to try to counteract that. It was good to see it didn't quite work out. The other thing for Wales as well was their red zone efficiency. We'll talk about it, how much they converted when they get their chances, and they were very good at it. They just weren't anywhere near as good at it as France. They had 9 entries into the 22. They had a conversion rate of 3.11 points per entry. A fantastic return. Anything over 3 is phenomenal. France's was 4.75.
Oh, mate.
The most of any game, any individual game so far in a tournament. So just electric. Just you can't, once they get going, once they start, you sort of can't really control them. But at least Wales gave it a go, would be what I say.
And you know, if you look at it, like, we'll get on to France in a minute because I think there's so much to talk about there. But with Wales, I just saw for minute one a much more big emphasis on the collisions. I think they saw England getting men versus boys the week before. You saw Wales early in defence and with ball in hand really trying to, you know, create, you know, an impact at the game line, which I don't think they'd had as much throughout the tournament. They had slowed down opposition ball a bit, which was, you know, the only way they even had a chance against France. But then even with ball in hand, I felt like they like you said, the game line stat reflects that. Is that all that was different in their attack other than that and the offloads? Is there anything else you've seen that sort of, you know, paints a picture of what Wales were doing better before we move on?
No, those sort of 2 things really, or 3 things if we include the efficiency. Yeah, offloads, keeping the ball alive, keeping it away. Game line. So the game line that they had against Ireland, England, and Scotland, so sort of the three other strongest teams in the tournament rather than Italy with respect to them, their average game line success was 43% in all three of those games, actually. So to up that to 51% is a huge increase in terms of the numbers and where they therefore got their success. Yeah. By making more offloads, you don't necessarily get penned down so much and you can sneak over the game line a little bit more. That gives you momentum, which gets you into the red zone, and therefore they made the better conversion rate once they were there as well. So those were huge things for Wales. Again, you might say it's good to see there's at least some positives for them going to the World Cup. I did hear a lot of the talk from Gatland was that his selection was more to do with some of those players playing their last ever Six Nations game. So whether they won't be there next year, maybe they still have a place to play in the World Cup, you're not sure. But it was something. It was the most positive game for Wales, I would have said, definitely.
Okay, let's talk France and what they brought to the table. Because, you know, obviously I think they'll be kicking themselves for the amount of tries they conceded in that game, which then put them in a position to not be able to, you know, truly challenge the tournament or put the pressure on Ireland in that game that maybe they would have liked to. But, you know, from attack, they showed some of the same things we've seen, that lethal, the offloads, the, you know, the clinicalness and lack of phases needed to score at times, and also just the versatility of their game that we know they kind of, you know, have the power game, the finesse game, and that sort of lightning quick ball that they can get in on the front foot in opposition half.
Yeah, it's all of those things, isn't it? It's multiple threats. They can score from anywhere and they can break you down any way they want. Power game, or they play wide, or they break off of turnovers, or they go to a set piece. They can get their big, strong forwards up tight in a 22 and they can rumble you over. So it's multiple threats. And how do you defend all of those? And the answer is you can't. Some of the big numbers for me, which I love this kind of stuff, is the ruck speed. We know how important it is for many, many reasons. But France had the second slowest ruck speed across the whole pitch. So they averaged 3.81 seconds per ruck across the whole pitch. What I then did, though, was sort of identify those rucks, take those rucks out where they were just in the opposition 22. That speed for their rucks solely in the opposition 22 was 2.12 seconds, the fastest of anybody. So just how much they increased their speed in the right areas. France kicked more than England in their game. They're happy to kick the ball away. It's not a case of they're going to just play from anywhere all the time, which perhaps we were questioning Italy over. But it's when it's in the right areas, when it's the right time to play, they flick a switch and they go. 2.12 seconds on average for every single ruck that's in the opposition 22. What can you do? How can you defend that? Again, the answer is you can't. There's nothing you could do to reset your defense to manage that kind of speed. France also scored the most tries that originated from in their own half. They scored 8 out of their 14 tries, I believe, within the first two phases, either one or two phases. So again, speed of ball, momentum, breaking the game line, line breaks, converting that straight away, not giving a defense any chance to reset, gather, and recoup themselves to try and do anything about it. They were just electric. They just turned it on when they needed to and scored some amazing tries, right? Some of those tries, the Pano one with the Intermac break and the Dupont support and pass, like, what could you do as a defense?
Honestly.
It wasn't a bad defense. And you think, what would we say to those guys in a review day the next day? Like, there's nothing really we could do about that. You just got to tip your hat to it.
Yeah, you just got to say fair play. I agree. I think, you know, when you look at France and, you know, where they let themselves down this tournament, would you say it's more on the defense, which is, you know, very un-Sean Edwards-esque at times? And I think if just looking from the outside in, look against England, I'm pretty sure they dominated that collision stat against England, that gain line that you were talking about, that England probably didn't have close to 51% of their carries over the gain line. And they're able to, and then now defensively, they have a poorer effort against Wales. That seems to me one big area which maybe Wales turned the dial up, which they were slightly off on.
Yeah, I agree with you, mate. Hugely for Wales' point of view. And then for France, that probably is the big difference. Without sort of missing over France here, something going to come on with Ireland. Ireland conceded 6 tries in the entire tournament. The next best was Scotland with 12. So, you know, France weren't even in that category, weren't anywhere near Ireland in that case. So yes, we talk about Sean Edwards all the time, don't we? He's a huge name and he's deserved it. He's done a very good job in all the places he's been, but that possibly was a slight drop off from a France point of view. Still very capable, comfortably capable of winning every other game apart from the Ireland one. But maybe that is for them the element where they need to improve into a World Cup and when they're going to come up against some big teams in their half of the pool. Yes, they've got the capabilities and they can turn it on and they can turn up their speed. They can score from anywhere. But can that outweigh the amount that they concede in defence? That's obviously the question always, but it's a huge, huge ask for them and maybe something that they've slipped up off of the previous year.
You know, the old saying, defence wins championships, you know, still coming true, even especially when you can attack like Ireland as well. So let's get on to Ireland, England and that game. Cracker of a game. You know, what I loved from the English point of view was the intensity that England came out at. I think defensively, the physicality carries on the front foot. You know, going back to, say, Manu in the centres with Slade and Farrell, England looked a lot more physical. That you could tell that they came out swinging. They weren't going to, you know, be on the back foot in the same way they were against France. And I think that showed in the game and how competitive and close it was at times. And, you know, then to absorb the red card and still hang in there for as long as they did, I actually think it was probably one of England's best performances of the tournament, regardless of result. But then Ireland just showing their class to sort of weather the storm and then just had the gears in the second half, similar to the Scotland game, just to take it away from their opposition.
Yeah, agreed. Obviously, the red card would have come into play for that second half a fair bit, but I think they would have had too much anyway. Yes, much better from England point of view. The numbers don't sort of reflect perhaps quite how close it was because of sort of how it was blown away a little bit at the end. But from an Ireland point of view as well, going into the championship, something on their defence as well, just touched on it, but they conceded 6 tries in this tournament. They conceded 4 tries in the last Six Nations. So over 2 years of Six Nations, they conceded 10 tries. As I mentioned, the next best within this tournament alone was Scotland with 12. So you can go 2 tournaments conceding less tries than anybody else in one. You know, it's crazy kind of numbers from a defensive point of view. And what that just gives you in attack is just pure freedom, right? You can then do sort of whatever you want. You know that you're not going to concede many points. You can, the game can be tight and you might need to score 2 or 3 tries to sort of win the game comfortably because you're going to concede so many. But some of their attack numbers, I looked across the tournament, they had the most carries in the competition, made the most meters, made the most line breaks, second fastest ruck speed, second best red zone efficiency. So again, from on paper point of view, those are pretty huge numbers that you're going to bring into your performance, then it's going to get the kind of results that we've shown with a grand slam. From this game point of view, I do agree with you, and certainly England came out and they were better. I think that they did drop off, so the numbers at the end of the game, as I mentioned, don't quite reflect that. They made 282 meters compared to Ireland's 471. They only made 1 line break in the game, and they actually only made 1 line break the week before. So again, 2 games where you've got 1 line break in a game is probably not sort of damaging enough. Physical carries are important, yes, to get momentum, to get quick ball, getting over the game line, which shortens a defensive line, gets them out of structure, and you find spaces and then create opportunities. They didn't do that second bit for me. Their average ruck speed was 4.38 seconds across that game, incredibly slow. Ireland's wasn't rapid themselves, actually, within the game at 3.62, but still far, far superior to an England point of view. Ireland beat 34 defenders, England only 15. 27 dominant carries from an Ireland point of view, just 17 from England across the game. So it just wasn't quite enough. It didn't quite add up to enough. And again, red card, of course, played a factor with that. But one big number, which I've never sort of mentioned before, we have a look at game line success, which means carries over the game line. You can also have a carry on the game line and you can have a carry before the game line. Only those carries really beyond that point of contact are really deemed a success because that gets you momentum. If you get stopped on the game line even, you can see that a lot of teams go nowhere and end up having to kick away. Some of the numbers here from England, from England's point of view, their carries before the game line, not even on it, let alone beyond it, they had 49% of all of their carries were stopped before the game line. Half of all their ball, half of all their possession, their carries, their attacking intent was stopped before they even got to it. So from a momentum point of view, they're not going to go anywhere. They're not going to get that ruck speed, as I mentioned. That's not going to disorganize a defense, certainly one like Ireland's. That's not going to make you any line breaks, and it's not going to score you enough tries. They scored 1 in the game. So yes, positive for me. Yes, that physical aspect was there. I don't think the rest of it's in place. And it's a little touch. I mentioned this last week with Steve Borthwick. I don't particularly like the narrative of we just need to work harder, we haven't worked hard enough, because it's kind of an easy way out for me to say we just need to work harder and that's the fix. I don't think those guys weren't working hard versus France. I can see some of them were out on their feet. France were just better. Ireland were just better. And they're just a long way off being able to marry all of the things together to be able to get any success. And that's a bigger challenge for me, which is potentially why they're avoiding it a little bit.
Which I think is fair. I think when, you know, it's interesting to see those numbers that, you know, 49% stopped before the gain line when I'm saying I felt like England's gain line looked better. But maybe that's just because I thought there was a bit more physicality or oomph in them in that day. But what I think is, this is what we talked about on the pod, is with England, it is still very quite one-dimensional. You know, it's still very much reliant on set-piece entry to 22, loads of phases, get a three, or hopefully eventually find a way to score. And I think like the lack of line breaks that you talked about is definitely an issue. And I think they haven't quite found the balance of like creativity to mobility to power in their team, and an attacking point of view of shape and ability to cut teams from sort of everywhere that not everywhere, but from at least 40 plus, like 40, 50 out, at least getting it constant entries to the 22, line breaks, things like that. We're just not seeing it from England in attack at the moment.
Yeah, fully agree. England had the best line-out success of the tournament, the best scrum success. They're the second best discipline at the end. They had the best going into the final round. Only Ireland just sort of conceded a few penalties on the weekend. So those principles, those platforms that you want to launch from are fantastic. That's great that we've got that in place. Yes, Steve Borthwick was going to bring that. But then I had a look at some of their other sort of numbers right across the board and where they sat. For the tournament, England made the second fewest meters, beat the second fewest defenders, had the second fewest dominant collisions, the fewest line breaks. They only made 16 line breaks in the entire competition. Ireland made 39. James Lowe himself made 10 of those. He was only six shy of an England team line break total. England made the fewest offloads. They had the slowest ruck speed. Also in defence, they missed the most tackles, had the worst tackle success. So they're putting themselves under pressure from that point of view. Kevin Sinfield, a fantastic man and a coach. I don't think that's within doubt. So maybe it's something with the players that you don't necessarily need a great structure to be able to make a tackle and not miss a one-on-one tackle. That comes separately. So maybe there's something within the players there. They just need to add those parts of the game into it. But that's sort of my point with the narrative is I think that's a little bit too easy just to say we keep building. We just need to work harder. I think we need to change what we're trying to do. I don't think a Leicester model of kicking the ball away all the time works. Although I said in one of our podcasts previously that the majority of games, vast majority of games are won by teams who kick more. The point of that is to get into the right areas to then be able to go and do something with the ball and attack. England don't have that switch. We spoke with France, very slow ruck speed across the whole pitch. But when they're in the right areas, they flick a switch and they go. England don't have that element. So it is piecing it all together. I don't think we have the major part of it. Yes, we can say the building blocks there, but that's not going to be enough to win, as we saw some Six Nations game, 2 out of 5 again. How that's going to pan out in the World Cup, can't see it being that positive, although we've got a fairly easy run-in. And then one other thing I thought was fairly interesting in a weird way was discipline being the second best. So they only conceded 47 penalties across the tournament. However, on average per game, from the penalties they conceded 195 metres of territory. So two whole lengths of the pitch just from conceding a penalty and getting kicked back into their own areas. So that discipline, whilst it was good in terms of numbers, what it caused England seemed to be really dramatic. It didn't give them any sort of, it gave their opposition a lot of easy outs, so easy territory, easy entries into their own 22. But just to give you a contrast as well, France, by contrast, gave away just 98 metres per game from those penalties, so 100 metres less. And just think about that in the course of a game, 100 metres where you're getting constantly pinged back into your own half, into your own territory. You then have to try and build and go from there again. So just an element that was sort of something that stood out, potentially quite interesting. But again, for me, the whole package isn't there for England, nowhere near it. I wonder whether there's sort of a full rebuild needed.
Well, I think it's going to be fascinating which direction England head tactically, strategically, selection-wise. You know, now Steve Borthwick's got time to post-mortem this sort of Six Nations, where it went well, what are the positives, what are the key issues, and then where does he take the team when he gets them come World Cup time, when he has his big pool of players together, time together to add layers and details. Fascinated to see like where this team goes, because right now, like as we just touched on, it's quite bare bones. You know, it's quite, they improve the set piece, they improve the discipline. They were able, but there's still some big gaping holes in parts of their game and lack of sort of a true identity or potency in attack at times, which probably need to be addressed. Last question for you. I think you said last week coming into the tournament, 11 of the 12 winners had been the team that kicked more, other than that outlier of France, Italy in round one. Did that stat continue across the weekend or not?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, continued to be. That's the only outlier. 14 out of the 15 games, the team who kicked the most went on to win that game. And when we talk about that, don't we, it potentially being seen as a negative thing. But it's just depending on how you do it and how you play off of the back of that. I mentioned that for England, it probably is a negative thing because they don't have any extra element to it. For Italy, they should probably do that more because they have the attacking element, but they do it in the wrong areas. So kick the ball into the right place and then play. There's so many elements to it. It's why we love rugby, right? It's not just a one-dimensional game. Teams have different styles. There's different ways of doing things, which is fantastic to see when they come up against each other. But, you know, kicking's always going to be there. It's always going to be an important element of the game. It's just got to be done. It's got to be done right. Another example, Finn Russell, we see him as a maverick player, ball playing, incredibly attacking 10, which of course he is. He kicked the most of anybody in the tournament for the most meters. He's happy to kick for territory to get them into the right areas. And then when the chance is there, when defences are a little bit more stressed because you're on their 22 and one missed tackle might mean a try, then there's a little bit more space to do things. So it's all about playing smart, using it to your advantage, playing in the right areas, and then going and then adding that extra element.
And, you know, when you see the stat, 14 of the 15 games, it shows it's not an anomaly that the team that's kicking more is actually winning the game. Quite an incredible, fascinating insight that continued, you know, throughout the whole tournament. I think that's a really relevant stat. But Ross, it's just been fantastic to have you on this whole Six Nations. Thank you so much for the insight, the numbers. I don't think anyone else really gets this detail or gets a chance to sort of attack it in the week from this sort of view. And so we're very, very grateful to have you on. And hopefully as we cover more big tournaments that, you know, we're doing work together with NBC, we'll be able to continue this in the future. But I just wanted to thank you, and I'm sure all our listeners and viewers appreciate it as well.
Thanks very much, man. Really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, it'd be great to look at World Cup stuff. We can have a look at some of these trends and how they translate into that World Cup and where the teams have taken them and where they've gone to from there. So yeah, it'd be brilliant to chat to you again.
For sure. And just for everyone as well listening and watching, if you want to check him out on Twitter at Rusko Hamilton. He's always posting insightful stats, breakdowns from games on the weekend, lots of good content on there as well. So keep an eye on that, especially on Twitter. Very active. So yeah, thanks again, mate.
Thanks, bud.
So good to have Ross on. Like I said in his intro before he came on and on the pod, thank you so much, Ross. We appreciate your time, insights, and the value you've added. And that is a wrap on this week's show. This is our last Scrum Down covering the Six Nations this season. We've appreciated all the support, all the followings. Apologies to some people. We've been having some issues on YouTube with geo-blocking, so some of our UK audience and more worldwide audience haven't been able to watch the pods, which has been a little frustrating. We're trying to address that. We just can't put footage in these at all, and then we're able to open them up to everyone. Which is a shame because I do think it adds value having the footage and for those that do want to watch. But at the same time, you know, we'd rather the pod be available to everyone. And so, you know, going forward, I think we're going to stick to that so that it doesn't get geo-blocked for you. And apologies for anyone that struggled with that. But thanks again, as always, for all the support, the listenership, the viewership, the comments on social media. Keep liking, favoriting, retweeting. We really appreciate it all. We'll keep continuing this pod throughout the season as we turn our attention to, you know, wider rugby issues, to back to the Premiership, to other stuff on the horizon with things going on in America. Lots to talk about, as always. But that wraps it up for today's show. So thank you for everyone. Thank you from myself and all of us at NBC Sports. We'll see you again soon.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.